Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the next edition of the True Turf Super Series, where we have a chat with our customers around the world and see what makes them tick and what got them into a life in turf. This time we're headed back to Dubai. We started in Dubai. We're heading back to Dubai now. I'm very pleased to have Matthew Perry join us, who's the golf course superintendent at the Emirates Golf Club in Dubai. Matthew, welcome along and thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Thanks very much for having me. And it's great to be here. I look forward to talking to you today.
Absolutely. Well, we'll cover a lot of things today. But firstly, how does a Bristol boy find himself in Dubai and now almost 20 years in the Middle East? How did the journey in turf start for you?
I kind of fell into it. I have to say I was a big, I played a lot of sport when I was younger, but I didn't really concentrate on any particular sport. I was playing golf, I was playing cricket, I was playing rugby, I was doing all sorts of things. Coming to the end of school, mum and dad are like, what are you actually going to do? And I was like, oh, there's this golf course management course that I thought that might be quite good. You know, why don't I give that a go? You know, it was complete random that I got into it. Got into it, started working, on site during the day, outside of obviously seminars and lessons and things like that. And I just fell in love with it. Just fell in love with being up early. I was always an early bird anyway, and just learning the craft of maintaining a golf course. I was lucky enough to work at some amazing places during that course on like 6 month stints. I worked at St Melian down in Cornwall and then Manningsea up in West Sussex. And it just set me up really well. Turned my hand a little bit to groundsmanship after. I thought I wanted to just, you know, become a little bit more rounded. So like managing cricket pitches and rugby pitches and things like that. So that was something different I felt that I wanted to do. And then fell in love even more with what I was doing, and wanted to really, you know, see how far I could really take it.
Yeah, no, that's great. And how did you find that, you know, the balance, I suppose, of thinking about golf? Because sports turf is great and really growing as well, stadiums everywhere. What did you like about the sports turf side of things, but what dragged you back into that golf course environment?
I think I like the routine of it and preparing for matches and so forth, especially on the cricket side. I grew up playing cricket more than anything. Cricket, you would say, is my number one sport that I enjoy doing the most, and that on the preparation side of it is obviously very different than what you do to, getting a cricket wicket ready for a tournament is what you would do on a golf course. So I just wanted to do something like that. But, you know, my love was in golf. That's what I was trained for. So I looked at the opportunity to get back into golf, went to a club in near my hometown of Bristol called the Players Club, quickly worked up to deputy head, greenkeeper, and then an opportunity came coming from the Middle East, which I couldn't turn down, really.
Yeah. Well, just before we go to the Middle East, the southwest of England, well, England's, you know, synonymous with great golf courses, but
yes.
So many different sort of microclimates across the UK as well for a what we call a smallish band of countries, I suppose. But yeah, some great golf courses down that southwest of the UK. And you mentioned St Melian and a few others there. But once again, some different grass types around the place as well.
Yes. Yeah. I grew up playing it was called Mendip. It was up on the Mendip Hill, so up there. But then you can go down to somewhere like Burnham and Barrow, which is on the coast side, which are more linksy. There's a lot of good golf courses in and around that area. But like you said, very different in different ways. You would most really compare it to some places, maybe like here, pretty much the same kind of golf courses. Yass is obviously a little bit different, but you know, yeah, there was such an eclectic of different types of courses that you can go on. Like you said, different grasses, different ways of maintenance. It was certainly great to play up on those golf courses, understand what is expected for each type of golf course, which sets you in good stead of when I became into the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, 2006, you find your way across to Bahrain. An even smaller island nation, I suppose, if we can put it that way.
Yeah.
How did you get across to Bahrain? And must have been, you know, that's the early days. Well, it's only 20 years ago, I suppose, but still the early days of golf in Bahrain.
Yeah. How does that go out?
Well, my parents moved to Saudi Arabia when I was 18 years old. They went over to Saudi Arabia. So they were over there. I came over to Dubai for the first time in 2000, which was obviously still relatively new in, you know, it's not as vast as it was now. And I was doing what I was with cold season grass. It's like, I'd like to learn about warm season, and I'd like to maybe get into that world. And understanding the cultures and being part of different cultures was also a big pull for me. So they said, there's a golf club in Bahrain. We drive over to Bahrain from Saudi Arabia. I went, looked it up, Riffa Golf Club. Okay, right, I'll just send my CV, just see if they've got anything, just see. Get there, like a couple of weeks later, get an email back. We've actually got a position as an assistant superintendent going. So, okay, all right, yeah, I'll be interested. Next thing I know, like a week later, it was January, I was going up to Harrogate to the show, met the club manager there, Michael Braidwood, and also the new superintendent, and Craig Haldane, who was the departing superintendent, and he was moving to Dubai. Didn't think about it. I thought that it went well. And next thing I know, I get offered the job and I'm off to Bahrain and to Riffa Golf Club, which was a fantastic, fantastic golf club to be part of. We had a senior event there within the first year of me being there. And then next thing I know, they're like, right, we're going to dig up the golf course and we're going to build the Royal Golf Club. So then I got to experience construction, which I'd not done before. And I was growing in the nursery to sprig the golf course. So it was nice to be a part of that transition as well. So that experience helps me a lot in understanding on building of greens and being a part of it and growing them in and so forth. So yeah, I think Bahrain was huge for me as my development, but also managing different cultures, understanding how people, how to motivate those kind of people. Yeah, it was like, I think if I was going to come to the Middle East and I came there, if I was to do it all again, I would still do that first, because I think it really helped me, you know, develop and be ready for when I did come to Dubai and be successful in Dubai.
Yeah, absolutely. Gave you a fantastic grounding. So yes, Bahrain itself, it's only, as I said, a small place. So there must have only been, a handful of golf clubs.
Yeah, that was the main golf course. A lot of sand golf in Bahrain. It was a couple of sand golf courses.
Is that like what we call a sand green here, which is a mixture of oil and sand or something?
Correct. Yeah, that's what they used to play on. It used to be the what they used to play on in the Middle East until where I am now got built in 88. And so, yeah, Riffa was the first grass golf course to be built in Bahrain. I think it was first got done, and I think in the early 90s, if I'm not mistaken, mid 90s. Same designer actually of the Majlis course at Emirates as well, Carl Litton. So yeah, they were usually used to sand, and then obviously they've done the grass golf course there, which was great for the community, great for expats. But also for the locals as well, they get to, you know, play on grass as opposed to sand.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very unique experience playing on sand greens.
I really enjoyed it. It's great to play.
Way to play. We've just had the, I think it's the Australia or one of our state sand green championships, $140,000 pro event was just held just recently in Outback Australia. And for those that haven't seen it, you know, you've got to rake your line effectively to get the ball in the hole. And so very interesting experience.
Yeah, it is very good. It's very good. I've not played it for a while, but every time I did play, I always enjoyed it.
Yeah. Back to the roots of golf in some ways.
Yes.
So you've moved there. You've been plucked from that tropical atmosphere of Harrogate in the heat of winter over to a dry Bahrain. And then you've got headhunted and across to where you are now.
Yeah. Obviously, Craig went down and he was down at, what was the course he went to? Nadal Sheba. And then he quickly moved across to Emirates. And then I finished about 3.5 years in Bahrain. And then he came knocking on the door. I need someone to look after being an assistant and be on the Fowler golf course, which was Paspalham, which I'm dealing with in Bahrain. And I feel that most probably I was ready for the next step of becoming a superintendent, given I'd been assistant for a while. But Emirates Golf Club, you know, I'm happy to just come there as an assistant and work my tail off to be able to get to superintendent eventually. I think it was just a no-brainer just to come down here.
Yeah, well, when you say golf in Dubai or golf in the Middle East, the Emirates Golf Club is that iconic destination, I suppose. It's the first place that it's done. And obviously with the tournaments that it's held over the year, it's a great place for you, obviously, to be in that region.
Yeah, really good. I know. I felt that I learned a lot. I don't get me wrong, I learned a lot in Bahrain, but I really started to learn a lot when I got to Dubai and understand it a little bit more busier. As you said, tournaments, like major tournaments, and working under Craig as well was a big thing for me. You know, he's obviously well known around the world now and was then. But it was good for me to, you know, be under his wing a little bit and learn, you know, the ways and the practices that are expected for a golf course and golf courses like that are at Emirates Golf Club.
Yeah. So how'd you find the transition from assistant to superintendent? Was it an easy transition for you? Because obviously a multi course venue and those sort of things. How'd you find that transition?
Well, I was quite. I did 18 months here and Dubai Creek. I actually moved up to Dubai Creek. The superintendent job came there. Rob Gradshaw had been there many years. Retired and moved back to the US. And Craig came to me and says, "Look, I'd like you to go up there as assistant." So I think it was great for me to be able to go into that. You know, we're at 45 hole here at Emirates. I went to an 18 hole and a 9 hole at Creek, which really helped me. Craig was only down the road. You know, he's that support system for me in the early days of becoming a superintendent. So that was great for me as well. I have to say, I've been very lucky in the process of how I've been able to, you could say it's low, but obviously you need to work hard to get to it. But no, I've had the really good people around me and the team was great. I really settled into Dubai Creek very well and understood, you know, the expectations that they wanted for their golf course. And, you know, it was great. I did seven and a half years there, which was, it was a great, part of my career and that I thoroughly enjoy. And you know, it's a lot to do with the team and the people that are around you. And we're all very open here with superintendents and stuff like that. We do speak to each other. We do rely on each other if we need any information or, you know, anything that maybe new that's going around and so forth. So I would say it was seamless. Obviously there's peaks and troughs and so forth, but you know, I think it was great for me to do that and for a length of time up there until such point I came back to Emirates.
Yeah, you touched on it there, but I've certainly, you noticed it globally, but I've certainly noticed it in the Dubai Middle East area about that local super support network.
Yeah, but yeah,
they are all pretty close together and everyone I've spoken to there talks about the great relationships they have across the area with other superintendents.
100% agree. Yeah, it's very good. Like our group, Dubai Golf, which is going to be changing soon to a different name, but we are all quite close and we try and speak regularly as a group. But not to say that we don't speak to other superintendents who are not even part of our group. You know, I think it's important to have, you know, that information is available and share it. We're all under pressure. We all have members. We all have lots of guests during the winter time. You know, if there can be any information that we can pass on to help someone else, then we're more than willing to do that, which is great. I think it's great that what we do have within the Middle East and UAE area.
Yeah, no, that's right. Well, let's now touch on where you are now, the Emirates Golf Club, as I said, iconic location, a venue that has, I'm sure, very high expectations from those within, but also from those that are coming to sample the magnificent course that it is. So tell us a bit, three courses, the Majlis, the Faldo course, and you got a par three.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So very different. Obviously, Madras course is the first one built in 1988, held the Desert Classic in 1989, which was the first golf course to have a European tour event outside of Europe. So that was a big thing back in the day. And then we got the Faldo golf course, which is floodlit as well. And then the par three course, which is floodlit. But two different types of grass, Paspalum on the Faldo and par three, and Bermuda on the Madras. So that obviously you have different programs, different ways you do things on each golf course. So that itself is, is good. I think you've got that, that eclectic amount of different things that you're thinking about. But it also brings a little bit more effort on some sides. But it's definitely very, very busy, both courses, especially Faldo Golf Course, given it's floodlit with, during the summer, 6 a.m. start, and people not finishing golf until maybe 12:15 at night at times. So it's a lot of golf in a day on one golf course.
Yeah, absolutely. But lovely to see everybody out there playing. It means it's a bumper sport and drive, which is great.
Yes.
But that obviously brings in some individual nuances for you and your team, because it gets very hot over there. We were talking at the start just before we joined about the heat, the humidity at this time of the year, and especially if you've got golfers out there till 1 o'clock in the morning, then if you're wanting to do something overnight or you start early, you might run into golfers still out there playing golf. Mm. So, some real challenges, I suppose, in having a popular facility that's played almost 24/7.
Yeah, it does. It does have its the ups and downs of maintenance can be. There's a lot of scheduling and so forth. In 2012, they redid the irrigation system, new pump station, and so forth. So we're able to water the golf courses in very quick time, which helps because the team start at 4 a.m. So you need to get the golf course watered, and then we can. So that's in our favor, which does help a lot. And just being able to, I'm lucky my team lives on site as well. That's a big plus for us as well, that they're not traveling in. So that really helps on that point of view. But like you said, with the humidity and the temperatures, yeah, they fluctuate. Obviously hot in the summer, but the humidity is in and around at the moment, and that just don't start to tell off. And then it gets pretty cool in the winter time. I want to say pretty cool. Some of you are thinking, well, what's cool for us? Like, cool is mostly around 12, 13 degrees overnight, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
But, us, when we're used to the heat, we do actually feel the cold a little bit.
Yeah. Well, but once again, it's that, and people don't normally associate the desert environment with cold, but yeah, absolutely, it gets cold overnight, especially the clear skies, all the heat leaving. So how do you go with managing, obviously there's a few points there about potential disease pressure as well. You've got a hot but high humidity environment.
Right.
It's probably got your water quality.
Yeah.
It's probably okay, but maybe saline or those sort of things as well. And then especially when you start getting into that cooler environment, maybe getting a bit of dew on the ground, a bit of moisture that you got to think about as well. So what sort of disease pressures do you see, and how do you manage those across the course of the year?
We're very proactive with our disease prevention, and we're on a preventative maintenance program, which helps us massively. Not saying that we don't get disease, but rolling as well. Obviously, I went to a seminar at a show in America. I think it was around maybe 2013 or something like that, and talked about rolling and the disease pressure. And we do actively roll. We're regular rollers of greens here. Don't get me wrong, we need helps with speed and so forth. But I also feel it does help with disease and disease pressure. So that's important for us, that we continue to do the programs that we do have in place, and we continue to do the rolling that we do throughout the year. No months that we're not rolling. There's no weeks that we're not rolling. It's regular. So that helps us a lot. Touch wood, we're pretty good on disease, but you still need to worry. I'm not saying we don't get disease, but we are very proactive in what we're doing in order to prevent it.
Yeah. And at the end of that, it's a living organism. We catch cold, the grass.
Is that what you want to use?
Yeah. And he says there's something coming through. And as you say, as long as you've got that preventative maintenance in place, you've got the ability to get on top of something or stay ahead of it. And certainly, as we found with rolling on greens, and Tom Nicolai's a big proponent of this, obviously.
Tom Nicolai's the person. That is the person who I went to seminars, and it was unbelievable seminar. It really radiated with me, and it always has done since.
Yeah, no, and he's still spot on today about, you know, activating the positive bacteria, I suppose, in the soil through rolling that then helps combat the disease and moisture distribution, all those other sort of things. So Tom just said he just come back from a European tour, and he's just sent me an email with a link to still something he's talking about with how rolling can help, let alone cancer the satisfaction, but those things.
Well, I agree completely. I agree completely with what he says. And I think that we've kind of shown that over the years as well. We've shown that over the years in what we've been doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, pleased to hear you rolling, and that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other aspects that I've touched on water there before, how do you go for water in the Middle East? Is it, it's obviously a desalinated?
No, it's actually it's TSE water, tree sewage effluent water. Yeah. Which can, it's got a lot better over the years. I have to say, we do have very high, our club, we have high pH, which has its own effects, obviously, but we do what we put into the ground, what we need to try and counter that. But yeah, water can be, obviously, we're very active on moisture and moisture probes and making sure that, and managing our, watching our ET and basically putting in, you know, what is going out. So, as you can imagine, it's important for us to do that from a course setup and the condition setup wise, but also from a budget side as well. So it's important for us to manage that very closely, which we do on all the golf courses. So that's something that we will continue to do, and in order for us to be able to manage it properly from both sides.
Yeah, no, that's great. And other strange occurrence, I think, is earlier this year, had a massive storm come through Dubai as well.
The year before. Before 2024. Yeah, biggest storm in like 100 years or something like that. Completely flooded us completely. I don't want to go through that again. You know, we've got certain things in place now to, you know, as an effect, and the whole country is doing things, putting things in place in order for us to, if it was to happen again, that we're able to cope a lot better for it. That was a pretty tough time. You know, we did manage to get the golf course open pretty quickly after, with a few adjustments, and people had to go maybe different ways while we were still, you know, pumping water out and so forth around the place. But it's a tough old time when things like that happen. And it was, the whole country suffered as a result.
I remember seeing luxury cars floating down the main roads. A once in a life fast storm, hopefully.
It was not pretty.
Yeah. Obviously, the challenge you've got with the number of rounds, the opening hours as well, how do you manage those? And I know Corey at Yass and Jordan as well have told me in the past how they have these heavy maintenance periods. So do you also block off significant amounts of time, especially when you're not going to have that traffic to get in and really
We've always had long maintenance periods during the summer when we do it. And, you know, we are a 365-day-a-year operation in that. The summertime, even though the golf course isn't busy, it's right when we do all of our renovations or do all of our projects ready for the season. We are in the season, start of the season now, the golfing season. So we do have like 12-day closures and so forth during the summer that we're able to do our heavy coring, heavy verde cutting, heavy top dressing. It's really important that we continue to have them, and the clubs are very good in giving us them, because we need to make sure that we're hitting, you know, the mark when it comes to this time of year. I'm very blessed that I have Monday closures on alternates on each golf course, Monday morning closures. So 1 week will be the Manchester golf course, the next week will be the Faldo golf course. So that gives us an opportunity to do our our cultural practices as well. You know, our roti cutting or our needle tying and our top dressing and things like that, and our flushing, and you know, that's great. That got put in. We redid the Majlis greens 4 years ago. We completely redone them, ripped them all up, and you know, reshaped them a little bit just to, you know, get a little bit more pin positions. And then brand new sprigs coming in from Georgia. So when it came around to that, I said, and we were starting to get busy because COVID, obviously, golf really went, you know, huge. I was like, look, if you want these golf courses to be, you know, in good condition, I need to be able to do the things that I need to do. I can't be doing it at night all the time, because that's when we were doing it. We were last play, and then we were going out at night. So we've got at Emirates, we've got morning closures, and I know a lot of other golf courses have got it as well around us. And it just helps us with doing those important things and even getting the golf course to a point where they won't even notice that we've actually done that, but it's actually, you know, it's helped us. So that, like I said, it could be a needle tie, it could be a top dress, and we just roll over it with a top dress and just push that down into the canopy. You know, those sort of things, it's really helpful. And I feel since we've been doing it, it's definitely helped us with the conditions of the golf course, that we're able to do those things. We have a lot more consistency. Don't be wrong, we do still do things at night, but having those morning closures is a definite help for us.
Absolutely. Anytime we can get that step ahead, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And especially when you've got members and guests that are expecting a premier experience when they're coming onto the course.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I know, like, we're very busy during the winter time and people pay a lot of money, but we still need to manage the turf. We still need to do the things that we need to do in order for it, because let's say you don't need a time for months and months, we're going to struggle. So I think the management are great here. They understand that. The members were very active in monthly updates, you know, videos and stuff that I do with the club manager on the golf course. And, you know, and if they're aware and they know the information on what we're doing and why we're doing it, it definitely helps massively.
Yeah, absolutely. Communications are a great key when you're wanting to set expectations and manage those expectations.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of managing expectations, you're 22 days away, roughly. You're probably not even 22.
I didn't know it was 22. you're gonna be worried. I was just a couple of weeks away. Yeah, 22. Oh, geez.
So you've got the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship, the RNA, and Augusta, the Masters events. That must be very exciting for the Emirates Golf Club to be hosting that.
It is. Yeah, we're looking forward to hosting it. First time that we're hosting it. Dubai Creek hosted it in 2021. I think they've always wanted to have it here, given, you know, how iconic the Majlis golf course is. We're finally having it in 22 days' time, and we're looking forward to welcoming all the participants that are coming, and presenting a golf course which is most probably going to look a lot different from what people are used to seeing on the DB during a tournament. So that's, you know, that's another challenge, and that I'm looking forward to as well, and the team are looking forward to being able to present a full Bermuda golf course as opposed to one that is overseeded in January.
So Joel, I think you, from what I've seen, you oversee the rough and the tees in about
the approaches. The rough tees and approaches we would do in December, ready for the tournament in January. Main reason for that is our rough does, like I said, it gets a little bit cooler, but it does struggle. And, you know, with the amount of traffic that we might get during that time. So that's what we do in December. So for me now, getting ready for the Bermuda golf course, we don't have the rough obviously up like we do during the tournament. Bermuda rough is very difficult. If you get it too long, it gets too thick. Right. And you know, we do need to understand that we have amateur players that are coming. Don't get me wrong, very, very good amateur players. But we need to make sure we've got a happy medium in presenting the golf course, and working with Chris Gray from the RNA. He's done a few visits, and we talked about course setup and so forth. And I think we've got we understand what is expected and not to take it too far on some errors and so that we want it to play well. We want them to enjoy it. We want them to, you know, good scores.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an event that's now live streamed as well.
Massive.
Certainly a great prize for the winner as well, getting to Augusta of the Open Championship too. Yeah. So there's a lot at stake for those golfers. So yeah, from a pure amateur event to the professionals, obviously the mindset doesn't change because you guys are wanting to meet your KPIs for each course, each event, I should say. But there's anything, I know you talked about the rough areas and maintaining those. Is there anything else you're doing differently for the Asia Pacific than you would for the DP World Tour event, the Hero?
Yeah, we're not doing as much like hand mow. We used to usually hand mow tees and approaches and stuff like that. We're not doing that for this because our other golf courses are open during that event.
Yeah.
So I need to manage the team as best we can. We're lucky enough during the Desert Classic, we're closed. The Majors is closed the week before, and then during the event week, everything's closed, and then it's just the Majors. Yeah. Obviously, everyone's on the Majors. So I need to manage. Me and the team and the assistants need to manage the schedule so that we're able to produce a very good golf course. But we also need to understand that we still have members and we still have guests playing on the other ones. So that's a little bit of something different than we're kind of not used to during a tournament. But a lot of things are the same in what we want to achieve on a detail point of view, you know, trees and deserts and stuff like that, making sure that they're clean, bunkers and so forth. But mainly that on the greens, like they don't want them the crazy speeds that we get for the Desert Classic. I wouldn't say they're crazy speeds, but you know, obviously pretty quick. They don't want it to that point. And it would be quite difficult for us to even get it to that point at that time of year as well, given the temperatures that we will still have at the back end of October. And they understand, they're very good and they understand that we've still got a season to go through. This event is in end of October, but November is known for our busiest months. And they've been really good, and the RNA and Augusta have been really good in that, saying, look, we understand that we're coming to play the course, but we understand that you've got major things after that. And we don't want to get it to a point where the course is struggling after as a result of that event, which is great for us. It's great for me to hear. But yeah, we've got it all pretty much, I think, pretty figured out, and we're in prep mode now, doing a lot of different things to get ready for the tournament. But we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to the opportunity and also showcasing it at a different time of year. You know, people are going to be very surprised tuning in, I think, and looking at the matches and go, is that the Majors Golf Tour? Well, where's all the dark green ryegrass and things like that? But it's good. They're going to see that. And then in a few months' time, they'll see the change that we do to the golf course. And it's quite nice to show that off.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's always great to see a premier golf course in a different light as well. You know, he's a seat that plays in different conditions. I think that is a great opportunity to showcase the venue as well. So when you're in tournament mode, and especially, I suppose, more focused on the Dubai Desert Classic, what's a tournament day look like for you? I know they're different across the course of the week, but how are you and your team managing that expectation of, we've got, you know, golfers off the tee at this time, we're going to finish about that time, but we've got to make sure we've mown, cut, blown, raked. How does that work for you?
Yeah, it's obviously very early start. They're usually around 7 o'clock tee off, 2 tee starts, so very, very early starts in the morning. I mean, we mainly do all of our work in the dark. It's literally like that. It just gets light and before you know it, they're teeing off. And we like to be completely off the golf course before they tee off as well. You don't want blower noises and things like that going on. As a classic, everyone's on one golf course. People are everywhere, you know. We have a few volunteers, and we have interns that come from the other golf courses within our group, and it's all about, I think, in the early, before the actual tournament week, we do a lot of runs, like tournament runs, like what the morning's going to be like. And most of the time, it flows quite well. I think the the hardest week is the prep week. I feel that you're getting into it, getting everything ready, getting everything dialed in. During the tournament, it does flow quite well once people are in the routine of it. And yeah, we're usually waiting around. Like I said, lucky that the team live on site. Some of them can go and take a rest, but we have emergency crews around the golf course if anything happens. But then they're all back in the evening, and we decide what we need to do for the evening, whether cutting greens again, rolling again. Normally roll first, pitch once and things like that, and then cut again in the evening. So yeah, you're always on call. You're ready at any point if something goes happens on the course. But the team are, I'm very lucky with the team that we've got here, very experienced. A lot of guys, have got guys who've been working here 30 years, and they've been through all of the Desert Classics, so a lot of them. I've not had anyone who's the original one, but it's great to have that experience within the team. They might have been doing the same job every tournament for the last couple of years because they're good at what they do. So that helps massively with getting the golf course where it needs to be and getting the feedback from the players early in the week and things like that, and from the tour. And if we need to tweak anything, we'll tweak anything. I'm very much listen to what's said and if we can improve, bit by bit, then it's always worth it.
Yeah. Earlier this year, I had a wonderful opportunity to go and work for tournament at Augusta and the US Masters in. Tell us about that experience. Had you been to Augusta prior to that? Have you had the opportunity before?
No, I've never had the opportunity. Obviously, having the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship has given me that opportunity, and I'm very grateful for that. It was an experience that I will forever remember. I'd never been there before. You talk about it when you're watching it as a young boy and stuff like that. And I was playing golf when I was younger, and stay up late and you watch Augusta and stuff like that. It was amazing to be part of it, to be part of the team. I wasn't on machines and stuff like that, but just being part of that team and understanding how they do things and how they run their tournament, gives you good insight on what we could possibly do in certain areas. So which is great as well. But just being there, being around, it's going to be known as a pretty good Masters with Rory finally winning. That was great as well. Rory's won obviously Desert Classic a few times. I wouldn't say it was just because I was there, but it was great.
Take anyone you guess.
It was just it was unbelievable in everything that they do, everything, the attention to detail that they do as well. I love attention to detail. It's a big part of my job that I enjoy doing. And enjoy in instilling that in the team, and I you see that in abundance there. It's unbelievable. The course itself, walking the golf course and things like that, it's got that aura. You're just walking around with a smile on your face, and just to be a part of it and just be able to walk on it was that in itself and a blessing. It was fantastic. Yeah.
And I was lucky to visit there a few years ago, and as you say, having watched it on television for so many years, you hear about the topographical changes, but when you get there, you go,
that's most really, and everyone says it when they've been, they always come back and they say, God, the TV doesn't do it justice, and it is so true, it doesn't, and like when you're walking the golf course, you're like, I had zero idea it was. You had an idea of the, obviously the undulations and the movement and stuff that you don't have it until you've actually been there and you're walking down 10 and you're walking down 11 and up here and there, and it's something very different, and I think anybody who gets the opportunity to go and visit, even if it's just for a practice round, you just go. It's one of those places.
Yeah, well, hopefully you get to go back there again. Maybe it's the Asia Pacific Amateur will beat the Emirates every year from now, and so you get back to work here. You touched on your attention to detail, your meticulous nature, and what you saw at Augusta, and how that really gels with you. You should be congratulated recently. The 59 Club, you
were inducted into the Eminent Collection, which is a global service awards for people who don't know about the 59 Club, and you've been recognised from the Middle East. From a core superintendent's point of view, what does service then mean? What does that sort of mean for you? Obviously, you were recognised for that, but obviously the service you're providing people on the golf course.
Well, it was great. When it first came in, you know what it's like. You get mystery shoppers and things like that. And they come in and they start giving you marks and stuff like that. And as a superintendent, you mostly push back a little bit. You're like, oh, what? They don't know anything about it and stuff like that. And I've been doing it since 59 Club first came to the Middle East. And I was at Dubai Creek and now here. But then I really started to really understand it and understanding what the expectations that were needed around the golf course. It's not just, you know, a lot of people say we put an emphasis on greens. It's not just the greens. There's a lot of other things that golfers see and want to experience when they play a golf course. And, you know, I've really been quite invested in it and making sure the team is trained and understood what the expectations are. Not to say that we don't already have high expectations, but, you know, there's some small things that we could be doing more regularly that would possibly would help us get better marks and be able to, you know, it affects us in our performance and our indicators during the year. And being able to get such awards of you know, agronomy for the year, for last year, for the Middle East, you know, that was great for us. Yeah, that's like, being part of a team to win that's the first time for myself. But you know, being active on when you get your marks through and so forth, and speaking to Mark Ball from 59 Club, who's the representative here, you know, and understanding those different things, I think has really helped us with our quality and like you said, attention to detail, you know, regularly doing edging bunkers and things like that, doing things that should be day to day, well, not day to day, but week to week, but that maybe we're not getting done week to week. And, you know, that in itself has helped elevate us a lot. It's not just us as the agronomy and golf course maintenance team, it's also the other departments as well. Yeah, being inducted into that, I was very happy for myself to be inducted to it, but it's not all just me, right? Obviously, the team are very much invested in it and understand and listen to the details that I like to have on the golf course, but also what is it, you know, expected from a golfer who plays at Emirates Golf Club.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important messaging for everybody out there. It's not always just about the how you prepare the golf course. It's those other things that you do to aid and add to the experience of the golfer out there, because ideally you want them, if it's a green fee course, you want them coming out and playing again.
Of course.
Or if it's a member, you want them bringing other people in to experience the benefits of membership of that particular club.
Yeah, of course. It's been great for us, you know, and I think long may it continue. We'll keep doing our thing. We've had a good year so far on visits and stuff like that, but we've got a few more visits coming into the season now. And it just helps, you know, I send it out to the team, the assistants, and they look at areas that are very good at photos and stuff like that. And we're able to see the areas that, you know, we might be marked down on and things like that. Mm. And we'll try and rectify them so that we're better for the future ones.
Yeah. Oh, that's great, mate. Well, you're doing a great job there. Outstanding job.
Thank you.
Thanks. Taking up a lot of your time with 20-odd days to go before a,
no,
before
it's been a good
tournament. So, Matthew, thank you very much for your time. We wish you all the success for the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship and also for the Dubai Desert Classic. And we'll be watching with interest to have a look at the differences that we can see on the golf course over those two events. But thank you again for your time. It's been great.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate speaking to you. And I know I touched on, obviously, rolling and stuff like that. I had to say that, you know, we've been so happy with True Turf and the rollers that we have here, and you know, long may that partnership continue in future years, which is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we appreciate you as a customer, that's for sure. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.